Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a special bonus episode of the Film Stage Show. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. Nick and Danny not with me today. I'm sure that they will be missed very much by our listeners at home. Coming to you today with a special episode, as I said, I am here with Dean Silvers, who actually was the producer on David O. Russell's first two films, and he has written a book, The Secrets of Breaking Into the Film and TV Business, Tools and Tricks for Today's Directors, Writers, and Actors. So we wanted to bring him on so that he could talk about his book and let us know what these tools and tricks are and give us some further insights. So, Dean, very nice to hear from you.
Yep, how are you? Good to see you. Good to hear from you, I should say.
Hi, I was Brian. About to say.
Right, I've been pretty interested.
So, yes, Wanted to get you on here because this is an interesting book. It's the type of thing that I feel like people have been looking for. I'm sure that Google gets 1,000 inquiries a day on the ways to work your way through the various steps of getting a movie done, from pre-production all the way up through post and marketing. And you've put all of your experience into a single easy-to-find reference. A reference that actually I should say to anyone who hears book on how to make movies and whose head spins trying to imagine the depth of the dialogue and the density of the book is actually a very quick and very entertaining read. And a lot of that comes from the fact that you put a lot of your personal anecdotes into it. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, what was your process in kind of deciding to create the book and then its subsequent writing? How did you decide on how to put all this information forward?
Oh, great. You know, it sounds like such a good book. I should go and buy it, you know? I'm now excited. No. It came about, and it's funny because you hit some really interesting points. The first one was I was giving a seminar a few years back that my co-producer wife, Marlon Hecht, suggested I do, because I've seen, as you said very astutely, for 20 years, I've been doing this and I've seen a lot of things and I think I'm a pretty quick study and I've learned a lot. And it's funny, Brian, I'm not going to knock any competing books, whatever, but too many of these, how to make it in the film industry, at the risk of sounding immodest, are written by people who have not succeeded in the film industry. I mean, I'm serious. What can I say? That's why they're writing the book. I'm being very frank. And so I really got excited because I said, you know what? I could really do this because I have specific examples. I've made 10, 15 movies and they've done all really well and won awards and I've made TV shows. And right now I'm shooting a feature and I'm doing a pilot TV animated show. And so we do this and we love it. And I've learned from it. So I got excited to teach the seminar. And then I teach this seminar once every few months, and it was really, really successful. I mean, people – and it was successful meaning that people really got a lot out of it. I mean, people of all ages, a 20-year-old, 40-year-old will come to me after the seminar and still be in touch, and I'm helping them do their projects, and it was really personally fulfilling for me. So once the seminar was working, I then started thinking about, well – there's just so much I can reach a seminar, you know, maybe 20, 25 people every month or two. A book could give a greater exposure and perhaps be more helpful. So then I started writing the book based upon the seminar and my experiences. And so that was the genesis of it. And it went pretty quickly because you ask my wife, I have a lot to say, sometimes maybe too much. But I mean, and it just came out because I felt it was really important. I felt that it was good advice. And along the way, as I was doing it, I looked back to books in the field that, in my opinion, succeeded. And I only found one. And it's one of my heroes. And Sidney Lumet read a book on filmmaking, 30 years ago. And it was exactly what I saw in terms of and now I'm not on his level. He's a wonderful director, but he talks about his personal experience and how to make a movie. And so I used that as a template in my mind because it was 30, 40 years ago. And then as I was going forward, I realized that there's a new model. So that's what got me really excited, Brian, the fact that I felt I had something to say but it actually made sense in 2014. And that was really, that was like the final reason that made me decide I have to write this book. Because, and frankly, I didn't know that it was the, in my opinion, it's the best time in 20 years that I've been in this business to break into the movie industry. And I didn't know that. I just was telling my stories and how I got into the industry. And slowly but surely over the course of my seminar, it became apparent why. So I'm sort of the antichrist. I mean, that sense that everyone's yelling it's a horrible time. There are only tentpole movies. The access is limited. I am 180 degrees on opposite. I think it's never been a better time. And so then I have to defend. That's a pretty radical statement. So I had to defend it. And then I went around in the book defending why I believe that is the case. So I know that's a long answer to a short question, but that's my initial reasons for making this book and going through it.
Well, that's true. I mean, it is kind of a radical statement, especially from, you know, people like me, the chattering film critics class. We see all the big tentpoles that come out, and the movies that make money are, you know, the derivative massive budgets, you know, in close to 4,000 screens. And you make a point of saying in the book that with the changes in technology and the methods of distributing, it's actually something of a golden age for that independent spirit and people being able to go out and create something radical and new.
Yes, absolutely, Brian. And also more to the point that you can be independent and eventually get that mass commercial approval. I mean, look at this past year's Academy Awards was American Hustle, Wolf of Wall Street, Her. I mean, the list goes on and on. Dallas Buyers, these are not, I wouldn't call these non-independent movies. No one told that, you know, they said, I have a vision, very strong vision, 12 Years a Slave. And they made those movies. And so what I'm saying is, in a thumbnail, if I can sort of summarize the theory of the book, and then if you want to go into particulars, but it's my son always says, it's like right now the studios are this major nightclub. It's this really hot nightclub that everyone wants to get into. Independent filmmakers, you know, again, to get a budget of $150 million of Scorsese and Final Cut and Leonardo DiCaprio, that's an independent film. And that's frankly what I would say should be everyone's goal, because it is a golden age, and some of the stuff is wonderful. Whether you like Wolf or not, he gets to say, have this point of view in a very provocative way. So what I'm saying is that's the nightclub. The big nightclub is a big studio. And what I'm saying is, you're not going to get into the nightclub right now. I mean, John Smith in Topeka, Kansas, let me clue you in. You write the nightclub, you want to come in the nightclub, there's going to be a guard there saying you can't come in. So what do? Unlike prior years, and years ago, again, I'm going through the book, as you know, Brian, I talk about film festivals and how that's not as successful as it used to be for 100 different reasons. But now what I'm saying is you can make your own little nightclub. You really can. And again, I don't want to go on for long answers, but because of three major factors. One is the internet allowing you to have an expertise. And I'm not against film schools, but I'm just telling you the people who didn't go to film school really have closer to an even playing field with the film school graduates than ever before because of the internet, because of the digital media. You can go and learn. There are so many tutorials and making films, and unlike I've ever seen. I mean, universities now are giving out free classes in this area. So one, you now have the knowledge to know it's inexcusable to say, hey, I didn't go to film school, I can't make movies. Not accepted. I can give you a list 10,000 long of people who are now making movies who didn't go to film school. David Russell didn't go to film school. People I work with, Bob Balaban didn't go to film school. Steve Chbosky didn't. The people I've worked with didn't go to film school. And it's even better now because you can learn not by the seat of your pants, but by focusing on the courses and the information on the web. Second thing, technology to make the film, the short in this case, I'm a strong advocate for shorts. It's never been a better time to shoot a film or short for inexpensive amounts of money. Again, 20 years in the business, I've heard that saying every year. It's from 1994 on. Oh, we now have Super 16. It's going to be amazing and cheap. Oh, we have 16. Oh, we have video. Oh, we have and it, digital, and it always looked like a piece of crap. I'm sorry, it did, in my opinion. It did, and they're all fooling themselves. But now, cameras like the Arri Alexa are really getting close to making an image that doesn't make me throw up, you know, and I think it's really great. And add to the new lenses and the thing people are meeting, missing, you need lighting, smart lighting. So all that together, I'm convinced I've never seen it easier to look like a really good piece of film than we have now in 2014. And then the third part, which kicks into being discovered, breaking in, is that when you have your little nightclub, you're not going to get in by knocking on the door of the big nightclub. You make a short film, and you make tons of short films because they're so inexpensive to make. And as you know, in my book, I give specific pathways, mileposts of how to do that. I won't, you know, go into that now because that goes on forever. But so my argument is you make the best shorts you can. And I go through two particular people who reinforce that. Mark Duplass talks about make shorts, and then you'll find your voice. And that's really important. You're not going to find your voice probably the first time around. Once you find your voice, as he did, then everything falls into place and you find your vision. It's a thrilling moment. If you do the hard work, if you do the shorts, you will find that moment. I can promise you, I've seen it 20 years of business as a lawyer, producer, director. I've seen it over and over again. And that's one. And the other one, I give examples, Rand Johnson did over 80 shorts in high school. It's a lot. But he did. Funny thing is, when I said that, I was just at South by Southwest saying that, and someone questioned that, and Rian Johnson tweeted back and said, yeah, Mr. Silvers is wrong. I didn't do 80 shorts in high school. I did over 100. So there you go. I mean, but that's him. But all I'm saying, Brian, is that you do your shorts, and by looking at my book, and again, I don't want to be like a sales pitch for my book, but I show you using the third element, the social media, how to get noticed. So my goal is you do your shorts. You do a trilogy of shorts, whatever, and I've shown you the book as a manual of how to do that, then guess what? The big nightclub is going to come after you. You're going to say, oh, that John Smith in Topeka. I've just been, because of his use of the social media, I've seen two or three of his shorts. They're really interesting. Like the guy who's doing Godzilla now. He first did a low-budget special effects short film, whatever it may be. They want product now more than ever. And they will come after these little nightclubs and ask you to join their big nightclub. So you see, Brian, that's I get excited, but that's what I'm talking about. There are reasons now that it's never been a better time. And we're so oblivious to it because we're stuck with old models. Right. The old model, go to a great film school, get the right connections, try and bang down the door, do a film, get into a film festival, save all your money, and then hopefully get discovered. It's a much easier way now. And I have specific testimonials from people who have taken my seminar, clients of mine as a lawyer, directors of mine as a producer, where they show this succeeds virtually all the time.
That seems a little, I'm going to say something that's a little provocative here just to get a statement from you.
So you mean wearing a low-cut dress? No, not true.
Absolutely. So what I wanted to ask was, and this is something that's kind of come up a lot. I was actually sitting at a sidewalk cafe with a friend of mine the other day, and I just snapped a photo of the sunset reflecting off the buildings. And I told him, back, 10 years ago, I thought I was a really good photographer. And now I point and click with my iPhone, and in 2 seconds, I can get a shot that looks better than anything that I was able to do with my camera, adjusting the f-stop and the apertures and the shutter speed and making sure I had the right angling. I can take a quick snapshot that looks just as good as anything there. And there's a sense when you say something like that, when you take something that used to be difficult to do or required more specialized knowledge, that you're then inherently cheapening everything by creating a greater mass of things that look just as good. So when you say that things like the Arri Alexa and even smaller ones like the Canon Mark II, when you're saying that you're able to do that, does that make it harder for the cream to rise to the top, or does that just allow people who had great storytelling instincts to make things that look more faithful to the way that they're thinking about them?
It's a good question. I mean, when it comes to camera and film, I have to see how that develops. Forget about that. That was a joke. So my point is you hit it right on the head. Exactly. It makes it an even playing field because at the end of the day, filmmaking is really about the craft of telling that story. So you've that's the best compliment you can tell in my book. Yes, everyone now has the same level. You don't have to go to the best film school to be the best DP. So what does that mean? You now are forced – to tell the best story. So maybe John Smith in Topeka or Betsy Main in Omaha, they're going to be discovered because they found out, guess what? There's this amazing Alice Munro short story. She wrote it 30 years ago. No one has ever heard of it. I think it's going to make an amazing story. Let me do a short version of that. I'll go out and ask her for the rights. She'll probably give it to me because no one's thought of Alice Munro's short story 30 years ago, and I'll find the best actors and I'll make my short. Exactly. So now John in Topeka doesn't have to worry about, it's going to look like a piece of crap. Because as you said, Brian, it's an even playing field. So it's never been about how beautiful the image is, unless, the rare Terrence Malicks of the world. But in general, it's who tells the best provocative story. We really are, as Plato said, a bunch of people in a cave with a flickering light against the cave having a communal experience. So what I'm saying is, I would love that. That's part of the reason why it's the golden age. Everyone can look really good. The wheat will rise over the chaff. Who tells the best stories? And that's why it's such a thrilling time. So you fell right into my trap. Exactly. So, and to let your audience know, I didn't feed you that question, really.
No, I thought of it on my own. And the anecdote.
Oh, that's great.
The anecdote was true as well. And
that makes sense. So now you go out and make a movie, Brian, as an excuse. You can't. Everyone now, it's going to look great. You hit it right in the head. And it's funny, because both my sons are filmmakers. One of them started shooting exactly as you did. The most beautiful sunsets I've ever seen on the west side of Manhattan, West Side Highway, out of his iPhone. And it was extraordinary. And that's when he started to realize, hey, I can do this. Now let me find a good story to make these images that look so beautiful compel to my viewer.
And as for the importance of the story, because you bring it up in your book in at least two very important ways. The first is the story of the film. And then there's the story of yourself and creating a narrative for yourself. So focusing first on the story of the film, the story that's actually going to be on the screen, there's, again, the defeatist view of a lot of the critics is that originality is dead and that it seems like everything we're getting is either a board game or it's a combination of two elements, like two ideas. You can't pitch something unless you can say it's RoboCop meets Babe Pig in the City. You have to do something like that or else your story can't get told. Is that's not something you subscribe to, is it?
No, see, because what's so wrong with that image? You hit it right in the head, Brian. It's the opposite of empowering yourself. See, what you just said is that you have to pitch to somebody.
Right.
You lost me. You have to pitch. This is the McGuire story. Jerry Maguire, you lost me there. You don't have to pitch to anyone. You have to pitch to your inner self to say, what story do I want to tell? And frankly, if they're out there, people say, well, I'm not that creative or I'm not that good a writer. There again, you do short films, might cost you $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. You go out and option for free those short stories. I mean, every week there are tons of books written with incredibly critically acclaimed short stories that you can option and find an interesting writer at your neighborhood college or high school, whatever, to write for you, and there's your short story. So it's all about empowering yourselves. You don't have to answer to anyone but yourself and maybe $2,000-$3,000. And that's your vision. So you see, that's what's so exciting about it. But people might be concerned about, I don't know how to do that. I think my book gives you guidelines, but also you love filmmakers, you love to tell stories, you love to read stories, find them.
And talking about empowering yourself, one of the things that I think cuts a lot of people off at the knees when they first set out to create anything is some kind of myth that they've heard. The myth, to make it in this town, you got to know somebody. Or like the myth I just said, where you had to combine two things that you can just sell in a novel way. Is there any myth that you have heard repeated to you from people who are reticent about entering this that you would like to dispel right off the bat? Like the most prevalent myth that exists that people think will keep them from succeeding?
These are great questions. Not just saying that. That you have to depend on someone else's approval to succeed. Someone else, there's some gatekeeper there that you need their approval. That's the biggest myth. And we've been so brainwashed to think that it drives me crazy. That the answer is no, you don't need anyone's approval, but find your aesthetic. It's such an empowering ability, a moment when you realize, hey, I could now control my future. I can come up with a story. I have a couple of $1,000. I can shoot this short. Following Dean's ideas of social media, I can get it out there and I can be discovered. And then they'll want me. I mean, it drives me crazy that they all, it always ends up, who do I have to show to succeed? You know, who do I have to know to succeed? No, you have to know yourself. And it's particularly problematic. I put a section in my book for actors. It's a horrific life where actors are always getting rejected. Well, why don't you do a short where you star in it? Find the best director you know, the best short story, the best that, you know, you can do all that and with the cheapest technology. So, Brian, it's all about that. The greatest myth is you need someone else. And also that you, if you're a nice woman or guy and gentle and quiet, you're not going to make it. Not true, because you can control your own destiny. And why this drives me crazy, it's funny, just a sidebar for a second. I was thinking, you know, I'm very optimistic about this. I've seen it firsthand. I've worked with directors that have won Oscars and Emmys and the like. And I'm very passionate about what I'm saying, and I've yet to find anyone rebutting this. And for example, I had a wonderful panel with Ann Thompson of Hollywood, an IndieWire at South by Southwest. And she walked away saying wonderful ideas. And she has such a background, wonderfully versed in the industry. And she was starting to see what I was saying as well and become an advocate of it. So I feel very strong about my opinions. And then I wonder, why aren't more people doing this? And then I could be wrong and I could be over-psychologizing it. But then I realized that there are four words I say to people, young filmmakers. And I feel very strongly about this. It's, I hope you all fail. That's my advice to filmmakers, because that's it. Everyone's afraid of failing. They really are. Deep inside, they're afraid that, oh my gosh, what happens if I don't do it? And I want you to fail, because guess what? You realize if you're really passionate, you may not do 100 shorts, but you're going to keep on going back and learning and find your voice. And that was the most exciting epiphany I've had through this book writing process and speaking to people, because I really want people to be empowered and motivated. And it drives me crazy that I think I fail because they're not. But now I realize, because read the book or speak to me, it's all out there. It's inconceivable that you, if you listen to what I say, you won't be happy in this industry. I'm convinced of that. But people don't do it because they're afraid of failure. And I'm saying, whether you, you know, I always give the, in the book, you go to the Basketball Hall of Fame and you see the Michael Jordan sign, and all he talks about is all of his missed shots, missed games, because it made him better. So that's why I find a lot of filmmakers, they're afraid. So what I'm saying, Brian, that's the biggest myth and the biggest obstacle. Two for the price of one question. But excellent. That's what, yeah, so that, I can't say that enough. I hope everyone fails. Because he'll come back and say, you know what, Dean? It's not so bad. Because I got up to the batter's plate and I took my swing and I'm going to do it again. And I learned so much from my failure. And then you're going to be a filmmaker.
And I think that a lot of that fear of failure comes from an idea that is Hollywood is a zero-sum game. That you can't be the next great director unless another director, you know, retires or dies. That there's only so much of the pie made of attention that Hollywood hands out, and it's weird. You're the most optimistic voice that I've ever heard talk about Hollywood as an industry, and the fact that you're encouraging more and more people into it.
Yes.
It is a little shocking, considering that there is a prevalence of the idea that it is zero sum, that there are 100 spots and they're all taken, and you can't work with someone else who's an up-and-comer because they might steal your thunder.
Well, but that's a really good point. But I go back to your original position a few minutes ago, which is basically saying Hollywood is now made of mostly tentpoles, and you have to combine two ideas to pitch it together. It has to be Rocky meets whatever, whatever. Absolutely right. So there's a dearth of lower middle level product out there. So I would argue, and now look at the studios. When Paramount, I don't have the numbers in my hands, when they do a $250 million film, they used to do 30 films a year, they're doing 11. They've all cut back on the amount of films. They need product for their pipeline. That's why in my book, I give two, as you recall, two specific types of films that are most desperate they want. And that's, again, my new four words, God bless Judd Apatow. He's allowed you, early Judd Apatow stuff, to do interesting stuff, whether it be Superbad or Freaks and Geeks. So poignant, commercial, interesting things. Look how fast he was grabbed up after trying for years. But I mean, you see Lena Dunham, there's such a need for product because they have a pipeline. and they want new voices. So it's not zero sum at all. Every studio executive I speak to are desperate. I have a client. He did one short film and won an award. He got representation. He got management. He's now signed up to do a film. So what I'm saying is, on the contrary, because they're so locked into high expensive tentpole films, the middle has gone out and the bottom has gone out from under the knees, and they need product. So my experience, and I deal a lot with the agents, I'm represented by a major agency, they're desperate. I've never seen them more desperate for young, fresh voices.
And so to those young, fresh voices, the people who've taken that that advice and they've gone out and they've, you know, brushed off the naysayers and now they've created something, what would you say is the, let's say, the top ways that they should attempt to get them out there? Like, we can take social media as a given. How should they utilize social media, well, rather than just tweeting out blindly?
Well, they have to. In the book, I go through it. But once they have the product that they're excited about, you know, once they've maybe done one, two, three, or four shorts, they found their voice. I have a particular affinity to comedy and science fiction, and I state why in the book. So you have to go through all those steps first. Make the product. Have a great product and be excited about it, which has your voice on it. Then what you do is, to get noticed, social media, no, but you target it. For example, if you had a short about dogs, you target the American Kennel Association, you target anyone you know. You've now done something which they have an affinity to. Let them see it. You target, my bias is towards managers, not agents, because managers are looking for clients. Agents are overwhelmed with clients. You target managers who have directors that are similar to your sensibility, which you feel your short is like. I mean, IMDb Pro is wonderful. Now, it's this again, my model number one, point number one, the internet. It's a walking Bible of people, managers who want to find the next talent. So it's your job to do that research to find who would I think feel most affinity towards my short. And then you can find a minimum 30, 40, 50 people. And you try, you know? And so let's say you get two or three. Two or three out of 50 is not great, but guess what? You have two or three people that now are really interested in your product. So you see, I'm not going to the nightclub. I'm going to handlers who can get the nightclub to pay attention to me.
Well,
and then even for example, I have a client, a perfect example. He saw, and it's sort of confidential because the deal's not done yet, but he saw Facebook had a certain aspect of Facebook that needed help for public relations. He came up with an idea for one wonderful documentary, clear at a cold call, that would fit their needs. He went to a small ad agency that have worked with Facebook before. By doing his research, number one, role model number one, he went with them. They pitched to Facebook. Facebook is giving him six or seven figures to do this huge documentary on the subject they pitched. Just like that. See, we wouldn't have had that 10 years ago.
Absolutely not, no.
So this guy's now, you know, getting involved in a major, you know, major project because of an idea they had. Unknowns, they're not like, you know, gray advertising, and he's not like, you know, Davis Guggenheim. He's had an idea with a small agency, and they got it, and they went with it.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing this energy to this podcast. I mean, like, again, it's one of those things where I have friends who have gone to film school, and they're energetic and they're enthusiastic, but there is a kind of undercurrent of vague sorrow about everything. And so having your voice there on the sidelines, you know, letting them know that it is possible, and then writing this book to help even further is a great kind of magnanimous gesture that hopefully helps to continue this wellspring of new talent that's beginning to come out.
I hope. And the only thing I can add, Brian, is yes, again, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I've succeeded. I'm a successful person in the industry. So it's not like I failed, so I'm not writing a book in the twilight of my... I'm making two or three films or TV pilot shows within the next year. And I'm building for two new people their small nightclubs. They happen to be my sons because they're very talented. But nonetheless, that's what they're doing. So the point, I just want to be emphatic. I hope everyone fails. And I'm talking from reasons that I've succeeded this way. So, you know, I can't be, yeah, if I sound exuberant, it's because I really feel strongly about it. And thank you for understanding that, too.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the best thing about the book is, you know, you say, you know, you're not, you don't want to sound immodest and, you know, you haven't failed. And the thing is, in the book, you're not really selling, you know, a system. It's not one of those self-help books that then says you have to buy the next six volumes. It really is, you know, once you have the book, it's trying to sell you yourself and your own, I'm speaking the you of the reader. It's selling the reader themselves and their own capabilities and their own potential out there, which is one of the best things about it.
Right, and then they can do the Zumba afterwards once they get the free ticket in the back. No. I thought the best thing about the book was my picture in the back. Come on, Brian, where's my help here, you know? Boy, who cares about the stuff inside it? It's me in the back picture.
I was about to say, the cover design is quite wonderful, too, as well.
Thank you.
All right, well, Dean Silvers, thank you for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen at home, I hope that you have enjoyed listening to this as much as we have enjoyed recording it. You could find Dean Silvers' book on Amazon, and... I mean, you can find anything on Amazon. I don't even know why I needed to say that.
That's okay. That's true. That's true. And also, just I don't mind if I have the time answering questions, you know, at my website, deansilvers.com. You know, if you have a question with and I'm around, I'll do my best to answer because I just do want to help people. I think you have to get empowered, and I want to help you get there.
And again, that is very magnanimous of you.
I believe in it, and I think it'll work.
Well, the book is, again, Secrets of Breaking into the Film and TV Business. It's a very succinct title. It tells you what the book is about, which is a kind of title.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right, well, thank you for being with us. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening and tune in again.
Okay, bye-bye.